Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo up here in the magnificent Pacific Northwest, where the sun is shining, and we're just thrilled about that. Hummingbirds are flying around, and we're going to be talking with a guest, Russell Shippey. He is a man who's back on the East Coast. He's managed to survive the hurricanes, and Russell, we're delighted that you're able to join us today. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Donna. Glad to be here.
Now, you live in Wickford, Rhode Island. How did you fare through Hurricane Irene?
Well, Wickford, Rhode Island fared fairly well. We lost their power, and I live right on the water, so I am still without power, but I'm optimistic that by Sunday I'll have power.
Well, I am thrilled for you, and my positive thoughts and sincere of what the people of you, like you, on the East Coast have been able to get through and to weather. It's absolutely amazing, and I'm so glad that Irene didn't have a super temper tantrum that affected all of you in a much greater way. Russell, your book, Our Journey is Our Work, Creating My Obituary, it's not a big book, and I was really intrigued with it, and when I first found out about you, I believe it was through the National Publicity Summit. You are a man that has known what it is like to be a multimillionaire. So many people that are listening to this would go, wow, that would be something I'd just love to have. You've done all kinds of things, yet you went through a pattern in your life where you said, this isn't good enough. Now, a lot of people would say being a multimillionaire, that's great enough, that's wonderful, that's optimum, but that wasn't for you. You had a 100-year-old company. I want to let my audience know that you were a graduate of Bryant University and Harvard OPM program, and you've decided you wanted to dedicate yourself to teaching, to sharing with people about what quality of life is all about, and is that the reason you wrote this book?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is, Donna. I felt that I was given a message. I was given an opportunity. I had climbed the wrong mountain, and sure, I was very successful. When I sold the business, it was still a growing success. But the reality was that it was not the success that was fulfilling to me. So after 50 years, I realized I needed to do what worked for me and what I felt my mission and purpose was versus what was expected of me.
You have, right at the in the prologue of your book, you mentioned something that, my goodness, I think a lot of people would hesitate to mention to others. And that was about your mother and how she had been doing automatic writing, and she kept records that you found, and your mother in 1988 wrote you two notes. Tell us about the automatic writing with your mom and about those two notes.
Well, my mother used to get up in the morning, and occasionally she would just sit down and start to write, and she never knew what she wrote until after it was over. Now, I happen to believe in that, but she had written me a note on January 13th of 1988, and I had been sick with kidney disease, and she told me I had been healed in the spiritual, but I had to slow down, clear my mind, breathe deep, stop judging others to allow the healing in the physical. And judging others and going too fast, and you know, those were some of my issues, Donna. But I didn't listen. I had the note, I read it, but but I didn't listen and follow through. And then on April 30th, 1988, she sent me gave me a second message that had come to her saying I hadn't followed the first message. Now, the most interesting part about it, I guess, is that I still didn't listen, and it wasn't until 2002 when I had a relapse of the kidney disease. I thought, boy, my mother wrote me some notes as to what I had to do, and I don't think I followed through. But by then, Donna, I was more aware and more intuitive, and I went back and read the notes, and I said, aha, it's right here, and it's 14 years later, but I'm finally listening.
Amazing. That's quite a story. Now, in your book, and this title is so unusual, Our Journey is Our Work, Creating My Obituary. You actually, after this, decided to sit down and write your obituary. Now, a lot of people would say, oh my gracious, that's creepy. Why in the world are you going to write an obituary? How would you respond to them, Russell?
Well, I would tell them that we all have obituaries, and it's literally our report card on life. For me, I had a vivid dream, and in the dream, I was in the casket in the church, and the minister was up on the pulpit, the local church I go to, and he was literally pointing his finger, and he said, he was a great insurance agent. And I'm there in the dream, and I'm saying, hey, I don't want to be known as a great insurance agent. There is more in life for me to do than that. And that was the message. There's more in life for me to do. Nothing wrong with being a great insurance agent. I was, on one hand, I was proud, but on the other hand, I was so aware that there was more for me to do. And then I'm yelling, hey, I'm not dead. Can't you see me? Can't you hear me? And I looked over. The good news, the church was full. Must have been my wife's relatives. But I'm trying to climb out because I wasn't dead, but everybody thought I was. Well, that made me realize that what I had already known but I had ignored, I was climbing the wrong mountain, and that if I continued, it would in fact kill me. Now, when I work with people, when I have them write their obituary, Donna, the first thing is they're a little offended, they're worried, they're concerned, but yet it is a very empowering process because it gives somebody the chance to say, from birth until today, what have I done? What have I accomplished? How does it fit with what I feel is right for me? What works for me? And that enables and empowers people to move forward with their lives, to live it the way they want to live it, to create the value they felt they came here to live.
You have gone through a number of very intense family experiences. One of them related to your daughter, and I believe her name is Katie.
Correct.
And this child had challenges. Share with us some of those challenges your daughter went through.
Well, at 2.5, she had what's called a ganglioneuroblastoma, which is a tumor, cancerous tumor on the spine. And it was at that point that I was working 70 hours a week. And, of course, I never went to doctor's appointments or anything else like that at that point in time. And I got the phone call that said, I'm at the doctor's office. Come now. And I didn't get back to the office for 2.5 weeks. but that little girl in her illness literally was teaching me about love, about value, about what's most important. And I made a commitment saying, hey, God, if she's here to teach me a lesson, I'll learn it, and I will, in fact, give back for her living. And if she's not going to make it, please take her and don't let her suffer. And then as I looked at her in the intensive care after the operation, I thought, and I didn't know then what the prognosis was, but I said, if I could change positions, I would let her be me. Not that that was that great at that point in time, but that I would be willing to take over what she, in fact, was going through. Because in really, in true love, you don't want to see anybody suffer. But she taught me some real lessons at 2.5 by her illness and helped change me to be the person that I was meant to be.
Well, I think that's a phenomenal story. You have a quote in your book by Nelson Mandela. Resentment is like drinking poison and then hoping it will kill your enemies. Nelson Mandela is a man of tremendous wisdom, and his life experience was very, very rigorous, tough, and lonely. Yet this man managed to be able to come out when the doors of freedom finally were opened for him. He was able to come out and look at life with a clarity and a wisdom that still touches the hearts and minds of people today. You obviously chose him because of that wisdom. In the chapter where you quote him, you say, we're all one. Was that a tough lesson for you to relate to, that thought, we're all connected, we're all one?
Well, I had lived my life otherwise, and I finally realized that we were, in fact, one. What you give out, you get back. And once I realized it, I had such a greater appreciation for everybody, and it really makes life better and more fulfilling because it, I think, encourages us to reach out to one another, saying, hey, we're all one. What we do to one, we do to the other. If we have resentment, it's going to come right back, and that poison's going to kill us. So I think it's a great empowering lesson that if we see it and learn it, it can create a much greater enjoyment in life for us, benefits for us, as well as the other people or the other person.
You have a very good attitude about birth and death, and I really agree with it. That when you're being born, you're born into the cycle where you're going to be prepared for death, and at death, you are being born again. You've got a whole new cycle that's starting. And you address that, and in addressing that, in one of your chapters called Transition, you discuss how we need to not judge others when they are not responding to us when we're going through the grief or the situation regarding a loved one or whatever the circumstances might be. Sometimes people just don't know what to do. They don't know what to say, or they're frightened by the experience you're going through. They are terrified of their own mortality. There's so many variables in here. And people just need to know it's okay to express themselves, to put things out. And you talk about how a friend of yours lost his son. And when you were ill, he had reached out and taken you to lunch. And you said you were surprised at how much your words that you had given him at the time his son had died had meant so much to him. let's touch on that personal interaction, because we don't always know what effect we have on people.
Donna, that's so interesting, because we don't know, and in not knowing, we may not think that people hear us. We may not think that they know our words or our concern, but yet far too often people do listen. They do appreciate. They don't know how to respond, and they don't respond, and we don't get the feedback. So that when we do get the feedback, it's so important. So it tells us, you know, to keep going. I have a newsletter, and one of my former employees who actually quit years ago wrote me an email because some other employee had sent her the newsletter, and she sent me a note of thanks for what I taught her and how I helped her. And I thought, my gosh, this is an employee from 15 years ago who quit, but yet she's thanking me for having helped her years ago. So whatever goes on, just reaching out and helping people, know that a lot of them or a number of them don't know how to say thank you. That doesn't matter. Do your best in trying to help them, and you're doing some good in the world.
Mm-hmm. I think so many times being comfortable in our own skin is important. And we might want to have someone give us approval or let us know that what we're doing is valued. But part of our journey is to understand that we've got to value ourselves. And if we're really doing what is meaningful to us, we can't help but have an effect on those people we come in contact with. Would you agree?
I agree with that, Donna. And I think we're all here to help people. Some people resonate to Donna. Some people resonate to Russell. And some people resonate to somebody else. We're here to help, but we can't help everybody. And it's more of a function of where they are at that point in time, whether they resonate with us or not. And that's not for us to judge or for them to judge, but there's plenty of people that we can all help.
That's very true. One of the lessons I've learned, and I see it so many times, that we don't have a capacity of ever absolutely seeing all the facts. And sometimes one of the things we need to learn to do is to listen. Because many times people are going through circumstances that are maybe very ugly for them, embarrassing for them. They don't want to be judged, and they've already judged themselves. They've already been so critical of themselves. But they need to have a place where they can feel safe and communicate about what they're going through. And I don't know of anyone that hasn't gone through this at some time where they want help, but they're afraid to speak out about what they need help for. And it's a fascinating phenomenon, because many times you find out people are going through such ugly things that you wouldn't want to walk in their shoes for a second.
You're absolutely correct. How often do we look at somebody and say, boy, they're lucky. Boy, I wish I was as lucky as they were. And you fast forward a period of time and you look and say, boy, what trauma and drama they are going through and have gone through. And boy, I'm sure lucky to be me rather than being them.
Mm-hmm. Very true. Now, you have short chapters throughout your book. You have a chapter on confidence. You have a chapter on failure. Why was it important for you to write about failure?
Well, because people worry about failure, and the thought, the idea of failure stops people from engaging and stops people from trying. And if you don't try, you've already failed. If you try, you may think it's a failure, but I think I referred to Thomas Edison and the electric light. Mm-hmm. Did he fail thousands of times, or did he just have thousands of experiments that led him to the electric light? I like to think that there is no failure unless you stop. It's just learning and training. And if we would all stop worrying about failure, we could accomplish so much more in our lives. Now, people worry about being judged, and it's our own judgment of ourselves that counts more than anything else, because that's where we are. And people's opinion of us are based on where they are at a point in time. And that judgment that they make can change as where they are changes. So that's not our business to worry about them. Our business is to learn and to grow and not worry about failure, but keep trying and keep growing.
You make a comment in your chapter on friends and enemies that if you had a relationship based on respect with someone, you could come to an agreement on a business deal. But if you treated the other person as an enemy and did not build a relationship of respect, then you could never succeed in dealing with that individual. Let's chat about that for a while, because we're living in an era that slowly but surely, I think, is coming to the level of wisdom that you can manufacture enemies if you want. You can go to war with them. The reality is, are we really doing enough with understanding and with understanding ourselves first before we make that judgment? And is it necessary to engage in a verbal, physical, emotional, mental, spiritual battle with anything? Is that a requirement? Talk about that for a moment.
Well, Donna, I don't think anybody wins a war. You know, somebody's left standing, but I can't change your mind. I can't put rule over you. I can't put a new government in place. What I can do is first sit down and with respect try to understand where you're coming from and what your feelings are. Not sit there worrying about what I'm going to say or how I'm going to tell you that you're wrong or how I'm going to prove to you that you're wrong, but yet respect and listen, and listen intently to where you are and what's going on and how you've come to the conclusions as to where you are. From that point, with most people, we can in fact find some type of compromise, some type of position that is a better alternative than going to war. And interestingly, if we all look back over our lives and think of something that we were very stubborn on and we knew that we were right and we had the only way to do it, and you look today back to that event 10 years ago, often you'll find that some of your views have changed and the other person really wasn't that bad. A quick example, I was on a board of directors and the HR person was in charge of negotiating with a union, a very large union. And he came into a board meeting and he had a necktie on with the Three Stooges, I think Huey, Dewey, and Louie or something. And he stood up at the board meeting and he said, I have the Three Stooges neckties on because these are the union people I'm negotiating against.
Oh, boy.
I thought, boy, do we have to let go of this person. He's not the person that I want at the negotiating table. Now, it's not about whether you like unions or don't like unions. Those were people representing other people that did have a point of view. Interestingly, the president of the organization was also offended when he saw the outright disrespect this person had at the table. The president went and sat down with the union people, he understood the employees' issues. And because he understood, because he listened, he was able to move one way and the other to give them some solution to some of their big concerns. He couldn't give them everything, but he respected them. He came out with an agreement that everybody was reasonably satisfied that it was fair. And I think the basis really was he treated them with respect. Unfortunately, that human resources person that wore the disrespectful necktie, he went off for employment somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, that's a good example of respect and coming to an agreement. And that was a union with 5,000 employees, so it was a pretty big deal, Donna.
Yes, it was a pretty big company. And I think that that is something that we need to keep in mind for our relationships that we have, because sometimes things don't work out. If you're in business, if you're in an environment, sometimes you have to take action for correction. And having that attitude of respect and not to be demeaning, but to deal with what needs to be dealt with is really, I think, a very strong point of negotiation and can involve a very, well, I would say a successful outcome, much as this gentleman that you referred to. You talk also, you have a chapter in your book. It somewhat relates to your mother, but you titled it Guides. And you have the questions right at the beginning of the chapter, who is guiding me? Who am I guiding? Are guides earthly beings? And you relate an experience that you had on a Friday morning when you wanted to go boating. Tell us that story.
Okay. And I do think guides are on this side and actually are on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps everyone is a guide for us in one way or another. And I'm just looking here. Take the boat out of the water today was the message on one Friday morning. Okay. I named the boat after my mother called Lady Virginia.
Are you still there?
Oh, yep, no, okay. I'm still here. But many times, and this is a good example, when I'm going to do something, if I sit quietly, sometimes something will change my mind, and my mother does come through often giving me messages, and particularly boating, because she trained me in how to sail. But when I want to do something in my gut, something comes to me and says, no, don't do it, do this, take the boat out of the water today. I listen to it because I've found when I listen to it, when I move forward a couple of weeks, I find out why I received that message and why I was guided to do something that I didn't want to do. And the other side of that coin, Donna, is when I do not follow my gut, when I'm sitting quietly and I get a feeling, I get a message, I get a sign, when I violate it and push ahead, I usually end up going down the wrong road, being, I'll say, in trouble or having to regroup again because I did it the wrong way. But,
boy, I can relate to that because I've done the same thing. Very much the same way.
It's interesting. I was bringing a boat on its maiden voyage in a storm, and I did not have new electronics. And we're moving forward, and the person driving the boat said, the water looks funny up there. And right away, I got a gut message from my wife, and I immediately said, turn. And I had him head back the other way, and then I checked the chart, and he was actually heading for a shoal where the boat could have gone aground in this storm. But right away, that feeling was there. just gut feeling, turn. You're heading in the wrong direction. And I've learned to listen to that much more than I ever used to, because, Donna, I used to fight it all the time, and I finally realized I shouldn't be fighting. I should be thankful that I get these messages. And I do think, Donna, we all get the messages. We just don't all pay attention to them.
That, I think, a lot of my listeners, including myself, would agree with. Russell, your book, A Journey is Our Work, Creating My Obituary, is a fascinating book that I think is just power-packed with a lot of wisdom. I'm so glad you were able to join us today, because I know how difficult it is back on the East Coast with power outages, etc., but you were able to make the show, for which I'm very, very grateful. And you have a website that is called OurJourneyIsOurWork.com. OurJourneyIsOurWork.com. Russell Shippey has been my guest today, and I want to thank you, Russell, for being with me. It's been a delight having you as a guest, and are going to be taking a break for just a moment. Don't go away. We're going to be right back. Again, Russell, thank you for being with me today.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way.
Multicultural
and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hello, this is Donna Sebo, and telephone lines are now open. You can give me a call at the toll-free number 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And if you are a first-time listener, we're so delighted you're able to join us today. And just know, if you'd like to call in and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, call the number 888-627-6008. Well, I want to let you know who we're going to be having on the air tomorrow. We're going to be talking with Christine Brown Quinn. We're going to be traveling via technology to London, England. And we're going to be talking about how to step aside. Superwoman. Ah, yes. That term is applied to so many women, and a lot of women just say, I'm not a superwoman. I'm just darn busy. I've got a career. I've got family. And I feel like I'm going in a thousand directions all at once. Well, we're going to find out some of Christine's recommendations. And then next week, we're going to be talking with Lamont Wood, Out of Place in Time and Space. On Tuesday, we'll be talking with Mary Pittman, The Little Book of Missing Money. We've got Destiny versus Choice with Marie Jones on Wednesday, Power of Your Past with John Schuster on Thursday, and then we're going to have Tom Sawyer. We're going to be doing a replay on Friday of the program that I did with him just a short time ago on a murder mystery, The 16th Man. Donna Sebo here. If you'd like to chat with me, 888-627-6008. Now, I did want to let those of you listening know my newsletter has gone out. It went out last night. So all of the information regarding the guests and upcoming travels, which are going to be taking me to Southern California at the end of this month, all of that is itemized out in the newsletter, and it will be up on my website. If it's not there already, then it's going to be there shortly. And just know, if you want to have more information about the guests that are coming up this month, then all you have to do is go to bbsradio.com, The Donna Sebo Show, and touch that button, Show Information. And all of that is there for your convenience, letting you know who's coming on, what they're about, and, well, it just gives you that little bit of an insight into some of the things that we're going to be discussing. Now, I wanted to say thank you to so many of you who are sending me wonderful videos, wonderful stories. I really appreciate that. And if you have a story about the paranormal that you would like to share with me, I'm still collecting stories for a book I'm wanting to publish, and I'd love to have yours. So you can send your story via email to Donna at DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna at DelphiInternational.com. And we will put it in our file. We're aiming for 100 stories, so I'd love to hear yours. And again, just send it via email, and we will be acknowledging you and then putting it into the collection. I also got an email from someone who wanted to put out an alert regarding Visa and MasterCard fraud. And apparently, this is going on in Alberta, Canada, and they have been experiencing this. And the material that I got said, please be aware, it is affecting people in the United States, but the Royal Bank of Canada was notified about this. And this is how the fraud works. You will get a call from someone, and they're going to say, this is blah, blah. I'm calling from the Security and Fraud Department at Visa. My badge number is 12460. Your card has been flagged for an unusual purchase pattern, and I'm calling to verify. This would be your Visa card, which was issued, and they'll give you the name of the bank. They'll ask you, did you purchase an anti-telemarketing device for $497.99 from a marketing company based in Arizona? Now, when you hear this, you're probably going to say no. The caller is going to continue with, then we will be issuing a credit to your account. This is a company we've been watching, and the charges range from $297 to $497, just under the $500 purchase pattern that flags most cards. Before your next statement, the credit will be sent to, and they will give you your address. Is that correct? That's the next question they're going to ask you. So you're naturally going to say, well, yes. They'll continue. This is what they're going to say. I will be starting a fraud investigation. If you have any questions, you should call the 800 number listed on the back of your card and ask for security. You will need to refer to this control number. The caller then gives you a 6-digit number. Then they'll ask you if you want them to read it again. Now, here's where the scam works. The caller will say to you, I need to verify you are in possession of your card. He's going to ask you to turn your card over and look for the numbers that you see printed on the back of the card. The 7 numbers, the first 4 are part of your card number. The last 3 are security numbers, your PIN numbers, that verify you are the possessor of the card. These are the numbers you sometimes use to make internet purchases to prove that you have the card. The caller, the scam artist, is going to ask you to read the last 3 numbers to him. After you tell the caller the 3 numbers, he'll say, that's correct. I just needed to verify that the card has not been lost or stolen and that you still have your card. Do you have any other questions? Now, after you say no, the caller will thank you and states, don't hesitate to call back if you do, and will hang up. You actually will be saying very little, and they never ask for or even tell you the card number. However, this one person said, after we were called on Wednesday, we called back within 20 minutes to ask a question. Boy, were we glad we did. The real Visa Security Department told us it was a scam, and in the last 15 minutes, a new purchase of $497.99 was charged to our card. So we made a real fraud report and closed the Visa account immediately, and Visa is reissuing us a new number. Now, what this person said that's extremely important, they said what the scammers want is a three-digit PIN number on the back of the card. Don't give it to them. Instead, tell them you'll call Visa or MasterCard directly for verification of the conversation. Now, the Visa companies say they never ask for anything on the card as they already know the information since they issued the card. If you give the scammers your three-digit PIN number, you're going to think you're receiving a credit. However, by the time you get your statement, you'll see charges for purchases you didn't make. And by then, it's almost too late and or more difficult to actually file a fraud report. And this person said, what makes it more remarkable is that on a following Thursday, they got a call from a Jason Richardson of MasterCard with a word-for-word repeat of the Visa scam. This time, I just hung up. We filed a police report as instructed by Visa. The police said they are taking several reports of this daily. They urged us to tell everybody we know that this scam is happening. And this person dealt with a similar situation again another morning with a caller saying $3,000 had been charged to my account for plane tickets to Spain, went through the same routine. This is a very active scam. So I want to thank the person that sent this information to me because this is very, very real. This is not a game. So follow something that I know that my husband and I do. If someone calls you regarding your credit card and they're wanting information, we get calls almost every day. It's amazing. But what you do is you say, thank you. I would like your information and I'm going to call back. Don't give them any information over the phone, period. And if you know of anyone who is an elderly person, and so many times they're so trusting, and they think their bank is actually calling them. The fraud department is actually calling them. You need to say, I will call you back. Do not give them anything off of your card. Don't do it. And I'll tell you, having a few friends that work in fraud departments at different banks and different lending institutions, the problem is becoming worse. We are in an electronic age where misinformation is so easily given that, I mean, it's just amazing. It's happening with such incredible speed. So please be aware. Don't let yourself be a victim. As my husband has told so many people, he said, I don't give information out over the phone. I will call your department back. Thank you very much. They don't want to hear that. But I know there are people out there that will steal your identity, do all kinds of things, but this is a scam that's apparently really doing well in Canada, and it's sifted into the United States. So be wise. No matter where you are, this is good information to be alert to. Donna Sebo here. We're going to be taking a break in just a moment, so don't go away. More good things to come. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. I've got a wonderful story that I want to share with you. And also, I have got a recipe here that I think is just fabulous. The Jamaican jerk pork chops with mango salsa. Yum. Oh, by the way, I wanted to tell you in my newsletter, remember I was talking about the blackberry syrup that I made? Well, that recipe is in the newsletter. So if you're in an area where the wild berries are out in abundance, pick them. If you want to freeze them, go ahead and freeze them, but know that you can make a syrup that would make fabulous gifts for the holidays. It's a great way to have that very, very special flavor available for what for us usually is special Sunday morning breakfast. So anyway, that's in my newsletter. I wanted to let you know about that. I wanted to share a story with you about a woman that was born with some challenges. And her challenge, and her name is Nicole, her challenge was that of being a dwarf. Now, not very many people end up with dwarfism. And she is 3 feet 10 inches tall. But this was something that, well, it just happened. When she was born, she had clubbed feet, she had scoliosis, couldn't extend her legs, and she had dystrophic dysplasia. Well, she ended up having, as a child, 25 surgeries, so she could walk. And her mother and dad, when they were raising her, did not focus on what she didn't have. They focused on what she was as a person and also her capabilities. Of course, when she went to school, she was made fun of. She had a terrible, terrible time. And one day, something special happened. She was in school, and there was a boy. She was sitting in a seat, and he told her to get up and get out. Usually, Nicole would have just sort of put her head down, pulled her shoulders forward and gone away feeling very badly. But on this day, something inside of her wouldn't let her do that. She said, "I'm not going anywhere. I am keeping my seat." Now, she's a tiny little person compared to this big kid. Well, the boy backed down. When they were at recess and were playing, the boy went up to her, apologized for his bad behavior, and she ended up finding, after she started talking with him, that he was a foster child. And she thought to herself, wow, Paul looks like just all the other kids look. So how would I have known that he was different? Paul had a different story to tell, just like she was different. And her stepdad would say to her, trying to give her confidence, people might be looking at you because you're different, but guess what? People stare at people for various reasons. Well, she learned how to make it okay to be different. And it was especially helped along when she was 14 years of age, when her parents took her to her very first Little People of America conference. These are huge conferences, absolutely huge conferences. And what happened when she was at this conference is that she met a lot of kids just like her, met their families, and she realized, yes, she was different. But there were other people that were like her, and she didn't have to feel so isolated. So she decided she was going to put her focus in another area. Nicole decided she was going to focus on being the brightest student in school that she possibly could. She ended up graduating with honors, went on to college, got a business degree, and she ended up meeting a very fine man who was also a dwarf, and they decided they were going to start a family. Well, she had some physical challenges with that. However, the doctor suggested a technique. She said, okay, let's try it, and she ended up with her beautiful daughter, Mackenzie. Mackenzie has the same kind of dwarfism as her father has. But you know what? Because her mom, Nicole, has this wonderful attitude about life, Mackenzie doesn't have a lack of self-confidence. She says, I'm just like my mom and my dad. I don't worry about it. This little girl, Mackenzie, says, I'm not treated any differently. I may be a little person, but I can be what I want to be. Nothing has to hold me back. What a wonderful example that this loving mother has given to her daughter from the lessons that she had learned herself about how to accept who she is. And I think that's something we all need to be aware of. We're all different, very unique in our own way, and that uniqueness can empower us in unimaginable levels of possibility. So be true to yourself, and you won't have any regrets. Okay, how about that recipe for Jamaican jerk pork chops with mango salsa? Sugar and spice and fruity salsa. Very, very good. Now, you're going to need some Jamaica jerk seasoning. You can find that at your store. You're going to need 4 cloves of garlic. You want to chop that up really, really fine. 2 teaspoons of dried thyme, 1 teaspoon of ground allspice, 1 teaspoon of packed brown sugar, 1/2 teaspoon each of salt and pepper. You need 1/4 to 1/2 teaspoon of cayenne, 1/4 teaspoon of crushed dried sage, 4 pork loin chops, and that's going to be about 2 pounds. They're about 3/4 of an inch thick. Now, for your mango salsa, you're going to need a medium mango. You want to cut it in lengthwise, then in half, seed removed, peeled and chopped. And you're going to have about 1 cup of mango. You're going to need 1/4 cup of very finely chopped red onion, 1 tablespoon of finely chopped fresh or teaspoon of dried mint, 1 small jalapeno pepper, finely chopped that, and then 2 tablespoons of lime juice and 1/8 teaspoon of salt. Now, your seasonings and the pork. All the seasoning pork, you mix your garlic, thyme, allspice, sugar, salt, pepper, cayenne, and sage. Mix that in a bowl, and then put your pork chops in it, rub it right over the chops. You want to cover those chops, or put them in a bag, plastic baggie, and cover it and refrigerate it for at least 30 minutes, but no longer than an hour. Maximum time with these seasoning, an hour. Now, and while that's happening, take care of your mango. Put your mango, your chopped mango, your onion, your mint, jalapeno, lime juice, and salt. Cover it, mix it up, cover it, and refrigerate it until you're ready to serve. Put the chops on your grill, or put them on the broiler, and when they're done, serve them with a salsa. Good, good summer dish. and it is flavorful. This is Donna Sebo. I know we're just about out of time. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. You are going to make your life a rich experience because of the choices that you make. Don't be afraid to trust yourself and trust those guides, as my guest Russell said today, that are always with you. Donna Sebo here. We'll be here tomorrow. Same time, same place. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.